Welcome to the FTN Fantasy Football Podcast, presented by the FTN Network, breaking down NFL action with the info you need to crush your fantasy leagues.
All right, everyone, welcome back to the FTN Fantasy Football Podcast. We are officially at episode 6. I'm Josh Larkey, one of two co-hosts of the FTN Fantasy Football Podcast, alongside my friend, my co-host, Ray Garvin. You can follow him on Twitter at RayGQ. That is RayGQUE, for those that are wondering. I'm Jay Larkey Tweets on Twitter, JLARKY Tweets. All right, let's get into it. And before we start, so today it's going to be a best ball show. I think it's going to be a ton of fun. There's going to be redraft implications. Ray is even going to talk a little Dynasty Best Ball, which is a format that I want to join. But before all of that, he does have an announcement to make. So, Ray, I'm going to let you take over. The floor is yours.
Well, Larkey, I mean, first of all, I'm excited to talk to you today. We've been chatting about this episode all damn day. And hell yeah, Dynasty Best Ball is the only way, man. I'm telling you, this is the new wave of Dynasty of the future. Best Ball, I love the format. Love the strategy, Dynasty Best Ball. It's the only way, I'm telling you. You got to get in a Dynasty Best Ball league. All the fun of start your lineup league without the headache of actually having to start your lineup. And some people say that's cheating. I don't give a shit. I like it. I love it. Dynasty Best Ball, sign me up. But yes, a little bit of news. This will be my second to last episode on this podcast with you. And you know, it's 100% your fault, Larkey. It's all you, man. I'm stepping away because no, absolutely not. It has nothing to do with you. This has been an absolute blast to get a chance to work with you. You know, before we started this, we'd only done one show together, and it was a long time ago. It's when you first started to get on the mic. So to have this opportunity to learn from you, to co-host with you, to podcast with you, to actually text and engage in conversation with you has been just an absolute joy. So I just want to say that I appreciate you, appreciate everything that FTN is doing. It's an opportunity that I cannot pass up. It's a passion of mine. It's a great opportunity. Not ready to announce what that's going to be. I don't like making big hoopla's over stuff. I just want to create dope content and have some fun. So we've got this show tonight that we are excited about, and I think people are going to have a lot of actionable takeaways from it. And then we've got one more after this, but I highly doubt it will be the last time that you and I are on the mic together to agree, to disagree, to have some fun. So let's just have a great damn show and close out this month on a high, man. I'm excited.
Yeah, let's get into it. I mean, this has been one of the highlights of my week each week. It's just fun to talk with people that also have similar interests to you with this whole football, fantasy football thing, yet also come at things from the different perspectives. So, like I said before, today it's a big best ball show, and producers, as always, they're in my ear. They won't shut up until I deliver the actual money-making info, and that is that promo code Larkey, LARKY, promo code Larkey can get you 20% off anything. I repeat, anything at FTN. And because it's a best ball show, hey, hop on to Underdog Fantasy. That is generally where I'm drafting best ball teams. Use the promo code FTN. If you're a new user, you get a 100% deposit match up to $100. So you put in $50, Underdog throws in $50 when you use promo code FTN. You put in up to $100, you could get another $100 back. It's an incredible deal. And speaking of best ball, my best ball guide for FTN is going to come out the beginning of June. And I know that some people listening, maybe they play Dynasty and Redraft, but they're not into best ball yet. And I think that one thing for everyone to keep in mind is that they're basically the same outside of like these start-sit decisions, and that all your summer research is going to be almost identical. So when we talk about players we're targeting or fading, when we talk about how to draft in best ball, almost all of that's just going to overlap perfectly with redraft. So we're going to talk about how to leverage team factors when you target players in best ball. We're going to talk about rookies and how they score points differently than non-rookies. And then we'll discuss a few players we're going to target or fade in our best ball and redraft leagues based on some early ADPs. Do you have anything that you want to add to best ball? Yeah, I know you already started to sell people on this Dynasty Best Ball concept, which, I mean, I have to get into.
Yes. Yes. It's just awesome. I mean, and again, like you said, it's a good way to look at it, right? Best ball, redraft, it's the same damn thing for the most part. You're just not starting a lineup. It's awesome. And I think some of the players that we're going to talk about today, it's going to be very applicable for those people, you know, those individuals who participate in redraft leagues or are thinking about dipping their toes into the best ball world. So tap into Jay Larkey, man, tap into FTN. There's a lot of dope content on there. You will be a sharper fantasy football mind by tapping into the content that Josh and company are producing. And the producer was not in my ear to say that. That is like real talk.
That is real. All right. Troy, I wasn't sure if you had a direct line to the producer or just me. Sometimes it's just heavy breathing. It gets weird at times. I'm like, I don't even know who's back there. So on a serious note, so before we talk about team factors and how to apply that to best ball, let's discuss stacking very briefly, because then it kind of dovetails into everything else. So if you've been living under a rock and you don't know what stacking is, it's basically your quarterback and receivers on your team, you're going to have some overlap with which team they're on. So Tom Brady and Mike Evans on the same fantasy football team would be a stack because they both play for the Buccaneers. And here's the quick, like 60-second explanation on stacking. I actually wrote about this last month for FTN, so I'm just going to read off something that I wrote because I think this is the absolute best description I've ever had for stacking. So I wrote that stacking is critical in best ball. If we draft Justin Herbert in the fourth round of our fantasy draft and then follow that pick up with Michael Pittman in round five, we're going to need Justin Herbert and the Chargers to have a great season while also needing Michael Pittman to develop chemistry with Matt Ryan and put up a strong year in his own right. So in essence, we have placed two bets by drafting Herbert and Pittman, a bet on the Chargers having a good offense and a bet on Matt Ryan's connection with Pittman. And these are two completely unrelated bets to each other. Herbert and the Chargers could have the league's number one scoring offense, and Pittman could be a total flop at ADP. But if we added Mike Williams in round five after taking Justin Herbert the round before, let's think about this. If Justin Herbert is a worthwhile round four pick, that's really early for a quarterback. So if you take him in round four, he's got to be really, really good. So we're practically guaranteeing the Chargers have a great offense if he pays off at ADP. And if the Chargers have a great offense, Mike Williams is probably healthy and catching a lot of touchdowns. By stacking Herbert and Mike Williams, we're minimizing what we need to get right. Because if our bet on Herbert is correct in round four, then the probability of our Mike Williams pick also working out skyrockets. By stacking, we've only placed one bet that the Chargers have an elite offense in 2022. It doesn't matter if the Colts are a good team, a bad team. I couldn't give two shits about the Matt Ryan, Michael Pittman connection. All I know is that if the Chargers are good, my team will be good. So hopefully that clears things up for the community who's like, why would I stack? What is stacking?
Listen, I've you know, it's a concept that should seem sort of fantasy football 101 Larkey, but a lot of people, I don't think, A, truly understand the power of the stack, and then two, conversely, I think some people do understand it, but they don't understand how to execute it, right? And I think execution of it is what's important. It's not draft Justin Herbert in the first round and then in the second round draft Keenan Allen, which you see a lot of people reach for a stack. You know, last year, Larkey, towards the end of the season, it wasn't as profitable, but man, the Tom Brady, Antonio Brown, Rob Gronkowski triple stack at cost last year, jeez, was so fun to have in best ball leagues and in start your lineup leagues. When you were rolling out those guys at cost, it was just an absolute cheat code, right? So I think throughout this episode, what will be helpful for people listening, whether that's for the redraft crowd or for the dynasty best ball crowd, is the execution of achieving said stack, because that's what really makes it attractive, really makes it powerful in fantasy.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. It's like if you get the stack right, yes, if you drafted Herbert in round four and Mike Williams in round five and they both hit, maybe it hit because Herbert was really around three pick and Williams should have been around four pick. It's not like, all right, let me take one of them in the first round, one of them in the second round. I mean, we don't want to get crazy. this is a good strategy. It's not like some gold mine where all you have to do is just stack and sit back and print money. If it was that simple, then I mean, I wouldn't be on the mic. I'd be out in an island. I'd be in Hawaii or something, counting my money, because I would just stack right from round one onward. So you don't really want to reach too much, like you were saying. And in terms of some research I've done, I think it's pretty straightforward research, but I think I haven't seen anyone talk about it before or do this, and I feel like it's very powerful. So what Ray and I are looking at on the show sheet, I just looked at each team from 2021, and because Underdog Fantasy is half PPR, I thought, hey, let's just use half PPR scoring. So for each team, I looked at the receivers and tight ends, so the pass catchers that you might stack with a quarterback, and I said, how many player games happened where 10 or more fantasy points were achieved? So let's say that in week one, the Chargers play and Keenan Allen and Mike Williams both score 10 or more half PPR points. That would be two games worth of points for purposes of us calculating this. So just counting up how many times the receivers and tight ends are scoring 10 or more fantasy points. Did the same thing where I said, all right, how about 15 or more fantasy points? And the same thing for 20 or more fantasy points. So I basically just ranked them in order of how many times 10 or more fantasy points were scored. So the top team from 2021, probably not too much of a surprise, is the Buccaneers. Because, I mean, what was it? It was Tom Brady with Evans, Godwin, Antonio Brown, Rob Gronkowski. Rashad Perriman, I think, had 1 week where he had like that random touchdown for like 50, 60 yards. It was just fantasy points galore. And then the team at the bottom, so 38 of those games happened for the Buccaneers. 10 of them happened for the New York Giants. What was it? Probably a couple of Kadarius Toney games. Galladay might have had one, if that. That was about it. I don't think, I assume none of those two names are surprising to you or the listeners out there. As we look through the top 10 list or the bottom 10, were there any names that stand out to you of, wow, this was a huge surprise to see that this team generated a lot of receiver and tight end fantasy points last year?
I don't know if there were any surprises per se, but it's very interesting to see this information laid out the way that you have it presented. It's very eye-opening, and it's got me thinking about, you know, targets, because again, I talked about a lot of the leagues that I participate in, I'm transitioning to best ball, dynasty best ball. And it's very just kind of eye-opening. And, you know, it brings a visual confirmation or empirical confirmation, like data, it's right here, that makes me say, like, I want to target players on good offenses. And if you're going to take, you know, a bet on a team that doesn't have a good offense, then you better be targeting, you know, the primary, you know, option in that offense, because there's just not a lot to go around there. And to see it laid out like this is very, very, very helpful, Barkey.
So I think that you actually made a really good point that helps people understand why you want to stack. Think about when we're drafting, we get so many player takes wrong. I didn't like Debo last year. Whoops. Like, we're always going to have player takes we get wrong. I liked DK Metcalf last year. Whoops. We're always going to have those mistakes. One thing that we don't mess up very often is which offenses we think will be good. And that helps with stacking, where we're really good at saying this is going to be a good offense the next season. So if I just read the top 10 for the most games of 10 or more fantasy points for the receivers and tight ends, the Buccaneers, Rams, Bills, Cowboys, Vikings, Chargers, 49ers, Cardinals, Bengals, and Chiefs. These are all offenses that we would have said are going to be above average in 2021. The bottom 10, the Bears, the Browns, the Broncos, Panthers, Jaguars, Saints, Titans, Falcons, the Washington football team, and the Giants. Now, out of those bottom 10, I mean, maybe you could have said, Jameis Winston and the Saints last year, and that they might have been good if he didn't get injured. Or you could have said, the Titans with AJ Brown and Julio Jones. I think those are the only two I'd be willing to hear out, but the others kind of make sense, like Baker Mayfield, the Bears. It was Teddy Bridgewater on the Broncos last year, like Darnold on the Panthers. These all kind of make sense to me. Same with the top 10. So I think that's just kind of a great way to be like, oh yeah, that all made sense. Maybe, and you're thinking, maybe I am pretty good at predicting which offense will be good or bad.
You know, here's the thing. So, and we'll get into this at some point in the show. Now, is it as simple as like targeting players from those teams? And we talked about the teams that we thought would be good offenses. You know, I think even going into this 2022 season, when we look at the 10th best offense per the stats that we're looking at right here, the Kansas City Chiefs, you know, how much does that fluctuate and change with the absence of Tyreek Hill? Or is this truly the system that Kansas City runs, the fact that they have Patrick Mahomes, and we should still count on them being a top 12 offense in the NFL? And if we're going to say that, because you're right, Larky, we are good at predicting what teams are going to be good offenses and what, and it doesn't take a rocket scientist to say that I don't think that the Giants are going to have a good offense this year, or the Commanders or the Falcons or the Jaguars or the Panthers, right? You know, so if this is closer to true than false, like, it's just got me thinking about the weapons from those teams that I want and digging a little bit deeper. And I'm sure we'll get to it with Kansas City, but man, there are some lovely best ball stacking options sitting on that Kansas City Chiefs team that the ADP is probably criminally low based on what we want to get out of those players during the season. So it's just, you know, it's learning, man. It's Larky. I cannot overstate this. You know, we're learning. We're learning. What we all like to do is player evaluate, but the reality is we don't fucking know, right? We have no clue. Like, there was no true way to predict Antonio Brown or Elijah Mitchell or any of those guys. But learning how to capitalize and take advantage of value, ADP, draft slots, betting on good offenses, betting on good quarterbacks, I think that's how we learn and refine and get better at our craft and our process. So I think this is an incredibly valuable exercise that we're going to kind of walk through this evening.
Yeah. So an example from last year where I got something right, but also wrong at the same time. And I think this kind of research that I've now done since will hopefully help me not make this mistake again. So last year, it's funny, you brought up the Tom Brady, Antonio Brown, Rob Gronkowski stack. That is exactly what I told all of my followers on Twitter day after day last summer, was the absolute nuts stack. I was like, hey, you can get Antonio Brown in like the 9th, 10th round. He might be the wide receiver one there. Gronk, yeah, I know he wasn't great last year, but 2020 was his first year back from retirement. The dude wasn't even in shape. Give him a little time. He's going to be better in 2021. So I was like, you have to take this stack. And then I was like, you know what? Mike Evans, ooh, that's a bit pricey. Antonio Brown, better value. Chris Godwin, ooh, that's a bit pricey. Better value, Antonio Brown. And I end up being right and wrong. Because yes, if you just look at points per game, Antonio Brown and Gronk killed it. But I messed up by not also saying, you know what? Even if I like Antonio Brown and Rob Gronkowski more at their ADP, I love this offense. I want people to draft Tom Brady if they're not taking a quarterback that can run and is mobile. Brady was the stationary quarterback I loved. So what I should have been saying is, you know what? I don't know. There's probably going to be injuries that hit at some point. Who even knows, like, who's going to see the field? But Mike Evans and Chris Godwin are clearly going to be starting in an offense I think will be really good. I need some exposure to those players because of that offense. And that's a big mistake that I made last year. I had very little Evans and Godwin. So I think that's something that I want to learn from this year, where if I'm fading a player on a good offense, I need some really, really good reasons why. Since if I think they're going to pass for 4,500 to 5,000 yards and 35, 40 touchdowns, hey, what's stopping that player from just by being a part of that offense? They're going to score fantasy points.
Yep, 100%, man. I'm with you in lockstep, brother.
So then the other portion of this table is I just included how many times the quarterbacks on this offense, how many times they were hitting some fantasy point threshold. So I was just like, how many games did the quarterback on the offense hit 20 fantasy points? How many times did they hit 25? How many times did they hit 30? And what's cool is that the same exact thing applies where the teams like the Buccaneers, the Rams, the Bills, the Cowboys, the teams that had a lot of fantasy points being scored by the pass catchers, the quarterbacks also scored a lot of fantasy points. And to me, at least, the one exception I saw was for mobile quarterbacks. And that the super, super mobile quarterbacks, one thing that I've said kind of as a joke, but I should probably start taking myself more seriously, is that the Konami quarterback has the anti-Konami code when they pass the ball. And that by running so much, it's like an anti-Konami code for the receivers. Where like Jalen Hurts shows up as one of the best fantasy quarterbacks, yet the Eagles are like basically bottom 10 in usable weeks for best ball, redraft, whatever you want to, whatever format you're in. So I thought that was one thing that I noticed as I was doing this, where it's like, oh, you can see Jalen Hurts in the Eagles. You can see Lamar Jackson in the Ravens. Like, boom, there it is.
Well, and what it is, I mean, you felt that in fantasy, right? Like, if you had Jalen Hurts, you felt great every week, just about. But if you were starting Devontae Smith, if you were starting, you know, Hollywood Brown or Rashad Bateman, like it's really a crapshoot. And this is why I said that with those type of offenses where a player like a Jackson or a, you know, Jalen Hurts, and even looking ahead to Justin Fields or maybe Trey Lance, if that's what they're going to do is utilize their legs in order to move the ball down the field, if their first and second read isn't open, they're not going to stand in the pocket and progress through to read three or come back to their first read, they're going to take off and run. Josh, the scariest thing for me is trying to bet on those ancillary weapons and thinking that they're going to be mega producers for us, right? Like, I don't want the third option in Baltimore. I don't want the third option in Philadelphia. I don't, because what is the likelihood that the quarterback is even going to make it to those guys, right? And sure, it sounds great the one week that Quez Watkins catches a bomb, but it's probably going to be one week on the entire season because he's just not going to get to that part of the read. So it's, you know, it's concerning for Devontae Smith this year with AJ Brown in town. It's, you know, you look at Baltimore now, you know, Hollywood Brown's out of the picture. So you've got Rashad Bateman, but that offense, I believe they are going to funnel it and run it the same way that Kansas. Here's the thing. Tyreek Hill was different, and Patrick Mahomes is an incredible quarterback. So the one-for-one comparison here is a little off, but that offense funnels through the tight end. It starts with Travis Kelce. They work inside out. That's what Baltimore does. Mark Andrews is the one in Baltimore. I don't care how you slice it. He's the one. So the two in that offense is Rashad Bateman. And then after that, I don't think I want anybody else. I don't want any other pass catcher in Baltimore's offense. It's either Mark Andrews, Rashad Bateman, or bust. And then you better believe that the running backs probably aren't going to catch a lot of passes because they just don't target the running back. So everything that, again, that we're looking at here should be best ball, redraft, fantasy football 101. Like, these quarterbacks, Justin Fields is probably not going to work his way through Mooney and Kmet and then get to Velus Jones. It's probably just not going to happen. It's going to be one or two, take off and run.
Yeah, 100%. Like, if you're at the end of your best ball, your redraft, whatever you're in, and you see Velus Jones, Byron Pringle out there, and you're like, oh my God, that is a starting wide receiver. Why would I ever draft a backup running back over a starting wide receiver? This is exactly why. There is absolutely no upside in these third, whatever option, fourth options in these offenses that, I mean, in the Bears case, like, one, we think it's going to be bad. Two, Justin Fields is very mobile and he's going to be running 6 to 10 times a game. That you might as well just swing for the fences and draft a backup running back and say, hey, if the starter gets injured, I know that this guy is immediately jumping into my RB2 slot. Whereas, I mean, what do you need to happen to confidently start like Byron Pringle? or Devin Duvernay on the Ravens. I think Duvernay is probably technically their starting receiver opposite Bateman. What is it going to take for me to actually feel confident putting that guy in one of my wide receiver slots? I think it would make me feel queasy. Whereas, like, if you have Alexander Mattison and Dalvin Cook gets hurt, you're not like, ooh, that's tough. Should I start Mattison? Should I flex him or Pringle this week? No. Dalvin Cook's out of the lineup. You're starting Alexander Mattison. Like, Byron Pringle is never seeing the light of day in your fantasy lineup. And I think that's a great point that you made, where it's like, yes, they may technically be a starter, but it's like a starter in name only for fantasy football.
Yep.
Now, I think let's move on to how rookies score in best ball, since I've got a question for you just to kind of understand what I'm seeing with the data. So I kind of broke this down. I called this, we got very business professional here. I had Q1, Q2, Q3, and Q4. So all those finance people out there, they're getting rock solid. They are very excited for what comes next with these fiscal quarters. So we just looked at 16 weeks because we're looking at some historical data. So historically, it was a 17-week season with 16 games, and people rested starters in week 17. Sorry, not sorry. This is how I sliced it. So Q1 was the first 4 weeks of the NFL season. Q2 was weeks 5 through 8. I made Q3 weeks 9 through 12, and then Q4 weeks 13 through 16. And I looked at only rookies. So first I looked at running back, and I was like, give me some spike weeks. I want to know how many times a rookie running back had 10 or more fantasy points in a game in the first quarter, second quarter, third quarter, or fourth quarter of the season. And I mean, you're looking at the numbers. I don't even want to say them because it doesn't matter. It looks like gibberish. There's literally no pattern if we look at the last 7 years. But when we switch to rookie receivers from 2015, 16, 2017, 2018, 2019, 2020, 2021, all 7 years, the second half of the season, there were far more spike weeks from the rookie wide receivers than the first half. And all 7 years, the fourth quarter of the season, weeks 13 through 16, there were more fantasy points scored by the receivers in that quarter than the other three quarters, all 7 years. So I look at that and go, wow, if I'm in a tournament for best ball or a tournament for redraft, wow, these guys look like league winners. Am I just staring at numbers and fantasizing about numbers? Why would this possibly be that these rookies, only receivers though, not the running backs, but the receivers are just scoring way more points at the end of the year? What are they? Are they banding together? What's going on here?
Okay, so I want you very quickly, Larky, to rehash this entire thing. So rookie running backs, there's really no pattern between the first part of the season and the end of the season as far as how many times they've had 10 plus half point PPR points, correct? 10 plus points in half PPR. There's really no pattern with running back,
correct?
Right? Is that correct?
Okay. Nope. I just see numbers. I don't see them getting bigger, smaller, nothing. There's just random numbers.
I'm looking at it. I mean, Q1, there's some years where there's a bunch, and you know, Q2, there is no pattern. But as I'm looking at this, there is a clear pattern for wide receivers, right? Like what we're saying is these rookie wide receivers seem to score more the second half of the season, right, than they do the beginning of the year. Is that a fair assessment of the number? I just want to reiterate this for everybody before I go into my theory as why this is the case.
Yes, very good to clarify. Okay. I know that sometimes I talk fast. I know that sometimes when I look at the numbers, I just get too excited. So
no.
Very
this,
good.
This,
to...
has no, this has nothing to do with you, Larky. It's all of us slow people out there that just have no concept of numbers and all. It's for us. It's not you. You didn't speak too fast. Here's my thought process. One of the in not that I have experience because I have not played in the NFL, but one of the more sort of just easier transition positions in football is running back, man. I mean, literally, we've seen people like Craig Reynolds get thrown in to a starter's role in Purdue. Who the hell is Craig Reynolds? For $1 million, I couldn't tell you where he went to school right now. I have no clue where Craig Reynolds went to college, but the Detroit Lions threw him out there. He scored fantasy points. We see players like Deontay Foreman, who we thought was just no hope because of a blown Achilles, get in there and score fantasy points. The running back position from college to the NFL is very just, it's a smoother transition at the running back position than it is any other position in football, probably. Just get ball and do what you've done since Pop Warner. Be instinctual, hit the hole, juke people out, run them over, and run fast. Wide receiver takes time, Larky. It takes time. We have been spoiled, absolutely spoiled, from 2020 and 2021 with Ja'Marr Chase and Justin Jefferson, two of the best rookie wide receivers in NFL history during their respective seasons, that came in and were just good from the beginning to the end. They were just dominant, right? Where the reality is, it is a big transition for all wideouts. And, you know, even years where a player like DJ Moore, 700 plus receiving yards in his rookie season, that was viewed to be fantastic. We get that now, and you're like, I don't want that. A 700 yard receiver is a rookie. Woof. Devontae Smith, 916 yards, is a rookie on a very bad passing offense. We should have been celebrating that. Like, oh my God, he was able to do that in that offense, and we still look at him like, I don't really know. So for me, it's quite simple. The transition to figure it out at wide receiver is just so much more difficult. It's not just about beating the cornerback that's in front of you. It's learning how to settle down inside of a zone. It's learning when to decelerate, how to get off of press coverage, how to separate at a catch point, how to get open in tight situations, building that rapport with your quarterback. You know, a lot of people are just, you know, oh, whoever lands in Green Bay, they're automatically going to be Aaron Rodgers is one. No, that takes time. It takes chemistry. So for me, when I see that the receivers towards the back half of the season started to have more spike weeks, they started to produce a little bit more, that makes sense to me, because by that point, they've figured some things out. They've seen some different defenses. They're more acclimated. Whereas the running back, shit, it's just turn around, hand me the ball. I can do my thing. So having this data gives me ammunition to go fire off some tweets on Twitter about expectations for rookie wide receivers at the beginning. And then it speaks to what should be, in my opinion, universally known, that it's just a much more difficult task to ask a rookie wide receiver to come in and operate at that level right out of the gate.
Yeah, it was really well said. I think another thing, as I'm thinking, so we've done mostly best ball talk, but if we just think about purely redraft, the more that I do rookie research on receivers, the more it makes me want in my redraft leagues to fire off some trade offers to get rookie receivers on my team after like the first month. And that if a rookie receiver is seeing heavy snaps and doing something the first few weeks, they're probably going to be really good by the end of the season. And that if you see like an Alec Pierce with the Colts, who's probably going to be their receiver two alongside Pittman, I think I'd be kind of surprised if he's not out on the field from week one. But, I mean, we don't know if he's going to be productive or not. I think if you look and it's like, wow, Alec Pierce is getting 5, 6, 7 targets a game the first month, whether or not there's fantasy points, he kind of, to me now, will become, that's the type of player I'm going to target in trades. And it's like, oh, just give me Alec Pierce as a throw-in. I'll throw him on my bench, knowing that if there is a bench receiver that could pop off, it's going to look like the guy that is already on the field as a rookie, where he's probably going up. He's probably not going to flash and then decline. I feel like Rondale Moore is the only example. Maybe you have some off the top of your head. It's the only example I can think of where it's like a rookie receiver who flashed early and then fell off. Usually it seems like it's the opposite, and the data kind of bears that out, that usually it's you look and you go, oh, wow, they're getting better. And that's why I was telling people, you want Rondale Moore on your fantasy team last year. So I was like, look what he's doing already in week one, week two, week three. And I think he's probably just that rare exception where, man, he burned me hard. I was all in on him as a prospect. He did exactly what I was hoping he'd do in the first month. And then the team was like, nope. So I don't know what they saw, but they were terrified.
Yeah, I think it's just one of those things where, you know, it's process over results, and we're not going to, no matter how much data you have, no matter how much film you grind, the variable that we cannot control is just player performance. We don't know what these guys are But shit, this is their job, man. Some days I go into work and don't feel like doing a damn thing, right? Don't feel like doing anything. And maybe that day is just wasn't my day. I just wasn't productive. I didn't send as many emails as I needed to. And then you go in and you're feeling good and you just like it's their job. So, you know, we could do everything right. The process is there. The data is there. And we can't control, of course, we can't control player performance. We're trying to use as much information possible to make our bet as sound as possible. So I think the process was right there with Rondale Moore. Just the result just unfortunately did not go in our direction.
Now, I'm workshopping this live on air. Here's a theory I am coming up with. In addition to the transition from college to the NFL and how for running backs, it's going to be easier for receivers. Do you think there's any weight to this idea that these rookies are going to be less likely to get injured than the older veterans? So I'm thinking about purely one example here, the Amon-Ra St. Brown example, where what happens, veterans like Tyrell Williams, Quintez Cephas, they're getting injured or they're underperforming expectations, and Amon-Ra St. Brown, he's there, he's healthy, and suddenly he's getting 11, 12 targets a game for the final month and a half of the season. Maybe that is just an isolated incident. Have you heard anything about that? Have you talked to any buddies of yours and ever had that conversation? Since I've never had that conversation, I'm workshopping this on the air. Is this a stupid theory, or is this like maybe on the margins these guys are going to be, quote, healthier because they're younger and their joints are more flexible or whatever it is?
Well, I don't think it's an outlandish theory at all. There are some people who truly say health is a skill set. Health is a skill set. Being healthy, maintaining your body is a skill set. I'll just say, I just think it's so freakish and flukish, Josh. I mean, there's times where literally I'm just walking around and I bend down and all of a sudden my damn hamstring, I'm like, what happened? Like, I haven't even done anything. Like, what happened? And, you know, think about how many times these athletes run a route on a practice field, play with their friends, play basketball, like, and then it just takes one tweak of one plant and boom, you've blown your Achilles out. You've torn your ACL. I don't know. I think, you know, holistically, yes, if you've been in the NFL for 8 years and they've been pounded season after season, there's probably a higher, I ask this, is there a higher chance that you get hurt? Or is it like your body is built up this damn callus to getting hit that you're more? I don't know. I don't know, man. This is the probably the biggest X factor in fantasy football is the injury bug, because you've got rookies who go out there and in minicamp. I remember, you know, however many years ago, Dante Fowler was a number one pick of the Jacksonville Jaguars, and in rookie minicamp, I think he blew his ACL just in rookie minicamp, just doing drills, man. So it's just insane. And this is a guy who played in an elite enough level to be drafted, you know, top 10 in the NFL draft, and goes out there and basically a walkthrough practice and blows out his knee or his Achilles. So it's crazy. But, you know, when these players get the opportunity to step into that role, a la an Amon-Ra St. Brown, and then they produce, I think the coaches are like, shit, this is a guy we need to get on the field. And this is why, for me, I think Amon-Ra St. Brown is secure. I mean, he should be locked in as the wide receiver one going into 2022 for the Lions, because J-Mo's not coming back until the later half of the season. And then he's got to face the acclimation period that most of these rookie wide receivers are going to have 8, 9, 10 weeks leg up on him.
Yeah, it's interesting with the Amon-Ra thing. I've always talked about why I like Elijah Moore, and that when you look at, if the Jets look at Elijah Moore, it doesn't matter who they drafted, Garrett Wilson, whatever. It would be foolish for the Jets to look at last season and see that Elijah Moore was at many times the best player on the field and go, you know what we want to do is we're rebuilding. We want to use our, you know, that guy that's the best player on the field, we want to use him less. And Amon-Ra is someone that I'm kind of mixed on for fantasy football, where I struggle to see how he's winning you your league once Jameson Williams is up to speed and that towards the end of the season, he might fade a little bit. I have him projected for a very high target share in the first half of the season. I think he, until Jameson Williams gets in there, since we don't know with his injury, with his timeline of coming back, and like you said, what his acclimation to the league will be. I think Amon-Ra is the wide receiver one there until Jameson Williams is up to speed. And even then, who knows who's going to be the wide receiver one, but I'm just a little bit wary of what his end of season production and like the fantasy playoffs is going to be. Maybe I'm overthinking it, but yeah, like why would the Lions look at Amon-Ra, the biggest bright spot of their offense, the final 6 weeks and go, you know what we want to do? Let's bench this guy. Let's have Jameson Williams and Josh Reynolds out there on two wide receiver sets instead. That's what we don't want Amon-Ra out there. So I think that's important. It's like the, as dumb as we sometimes make it seem like the coaches are, it's hard to ever imagine that they would see someone like Amon-Ra commanding 11 targets a game in the final 6 weeks and go, we should bench that guy. Yeah, he was a fourth rounder. He shouldn't be out on the field anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not happening. It's not happening. I'll just say that. It's not happening.
And then actually, while we're talking, funny injury story, just about the flukiness of injuries. This was early on in my Twitter career. I was probably like, I probably had 500 followers, if not fewer at this point. My first tweet that got a ton of likes was a tweet I made about Evan Engram. I think I commented on some bigger account's post. They were talking about Evan Engram. And I basically was like, if Evan Engram plays every game and stays healthy for the full season, I will propose to my girlfriend. And I thought that was just a funny tweet. Some people screenshotted, I guess. And then what happened in 2020? Evan Engram played every single game. And I was like, are you kidding me? You can't find a more like high injury likelihood tight end. He's undersized. It doesn't seem like the dude stretches because he's constantly tweaking hamstrings. He's got a litany of lower body injuries. Like if anyone was not going to make it through a full season healthy, it's the guy who can't stay healthy and he's also undersized his position while they try and put him in a high volume role. And then Evan Engram had like 100 something targets and never missed a game. So I think he will always be my example from now on of like, you can just never assume that a guy is going to be fully healthy. Never assume that a guy is definitely going to get hurt. Do you have anything to add on this or should we move on to some targets and fades?
Yeah, move on. Let's get to some targets, man.
All right. We got deep in the injury talk. I don't know.
Yeah, we did. Are you a doctor? Are you Dr. Larkey here? Are you an MD?
You know, not yet. I would say I'm a doctor in absolutely nothing. So yeah, that's why it's pure speculation. I mean, clearly if I was a doctor, I misdiagnosed Evan Engram in 2020. So thank God.
There are some Twitter doctors that do a lot of misdiagnosis and peddle that. Another topic, another day.
Yeah, my favorite is like, oh, you can see the knee moved here. It's clearly a torn ACL. And then like 20 minutes later, the team is like, he's jogging on the sidelines. He'll be right back in on the next play.
gotta love those Twitter MDs, man. Gotta love it.
All right, so let's talk about some targets and fades. These are some best ball ADPs on Underdog, but I mean, Underdog has such high volume with how many people draft on that platform that I always like using it, not just for best ball, but redraft, because this is where people are drafting. These are actual humans paying money and making these picks. Generally, it translates pretty well to redraft, best ball. If you're in a dynasty league, kind of what to expect for the players on your roster for the upcoming season. Do you want to start with some targets? You want me to lead off on this one?
Yeah, you lead off so I can just piggyback off of what you say. No, I've got some targets, but you lead off.
All right, I'll start off with T. Higgins. T. Higgins, I think, is actually going to be... I'm starting off with him because he weaves in nicely to what we talked about earlier on, where we want to target good offenses and that these good offenses have a lot of players scoring a lot of fantasy points. And T. Higgins takes some flack because he is not a team's number one option. And there's some people out there that where they're like, I would rather have, give me like a Kenny Golladay because that's the team's wide receiver one. T. Higgins is not the team's wide receiver one. And I think going through the exercise earlier, now everyone knows there's data to back up that's absolute bullshit. You should not say that T. Higgins has no fantasy ceiling because he's the wide receiver two. He actually outscored Ja'Marr Chase in fantasy points in the second half of last season. The first half, he had, I think it was a shoulder injury. fully healthy in the second half, he outscored Ja'Marr Chase. Am I going to draft him before Ja'Marr Chase? No, you don't have to. I wouldn't even recommend that. You should always target the player that's even younger who just broke the rookie receiving yards record. But Ja'Marr Chase, ADP of 26. So he goes early third round at wide receiver 11. And if you're telling me that I'm going to get like 23-24% of Joe Burrow's targets with a really high average depth of target and a guy that's 6'4", 6'5", whatever he is, T. Higgins, probably going to be used in the red zone, I'm just going to take that guy because, hey, if Joe Burrow's throwing 35-40 touchdown passes, what's stopping 10 of them from going to T. Higgins? And the guy was averaging like 18 fantasy points a game in the second half of last year when he was fully healthy. I think T. Higgins looks a lot more like someone that should go in the second round. So early third round, I'm like, yeah, the discount is purely because he is not technically the number one. So that's kind of how I see it and why I think that he's a really good process play based on what we were discussing earlier.
Listen, Larky, you're talking about T. Higgins and I love it. I'm vibing with you. But if I close my eyes, if you go through that soundbite again, just same thing, 6'3", 6'4", red zone target, you know, high-powered offense, quarterback that wants to push the ball downfield, you know, average depth of target is way down there, not the team's number one wide receiver. I feel like you're describing my number one target. Yeah, I feel like you're describing my guy. And unlike the sexiness of a T. Higgins, he's had some stink on him because he's been on a bad team for the past 2 years. But my goodness, what a gift. What a gift from the football gods. Allen Robinson in Los Angeles with Matthew Stafford. I mean, you talk about a quarterback that wants to throw the ball downfield and he just doesn't give a shit. YOLO Stafford, he has no problem leading the league in interceptions because he's going to continue to throw the ball downfield. And you're talking about a wide receiver in A-Rob who his current ADP is 55 overall, wide receiver 25 off of the board. Larky, I'm not trying to be hot takey here, but at the end of the year, it wouldn't shock me if he outproduces T. Higgins. It wouldn't shock me. On this offense, as the team's number two, single covered, red zone threat, downfield target, we saw how useful Odell Beckham was in that offense, and that was an OBJ who was traded to the Rams midseason, didn't know the playbook, was barely on the field because he didn't know what the hell to do. Now you get Allen Robinson there, who's going to get a full offseason of work with Stafford, installing the offense. I mean, what is it out of the realm of possibility to just say we could look up at the end of the year and Allen Robinson is a top 15 wide receiver in fantasy football this year? And I'm being conservative with top 15 and you're getting him at wide receiver 25 price. My God, you talk about the Rams offense, it's target consolidation. They throw to like four people. Throw to Cooper Kupp, tight end, running back. Van Jefferson gets his a little bit here and there, and the number two wideout. No Robert Woods. It's going to be a healthy dose of Cooper Kupp and Allen Robinson. That's all you're going to hear Sunday after Sunday. Kupp, Robinson, Robinson, Kupp, Robinson, Kupp, Kupp, Robin. That's it. Like, I want all the Allen freaking Robinson that I can get my hands on.
So as you're talking about it, let me pull up the age, because I think one thing that I've heard is like, people talk about how Allen Robinson doesn't have upside because of his age. So Allen Robinson turns 29 in August. We're doing some live Googling. Cooper Kupp turns 29 in June. There it is. I've heard people be like, oh, Allen Robinson's been around forever. Like, he's past his prime. Cooper Kupp is older than Allen Robinson. What are we doing? I think they should be a lot closer. Like, obviously you take Cooper Kupp first because he had the most historic fantasy season ever. But just like how you were like, oh, it wouldn't shock me if Robinson somehow outscores Higgins. I'm not saying this is going to happen. Probably not. But it actually would not shock me if Allen Robinson outscored Cooper Kupp. He has a longer track record of elite fantasy and real life production. Remember all those years ago he was on the Jaguars? He had like 1,400 yards and 12 touchdowns. Allen Robinson has never had good quarterback play. And he's been a very consistent fantasy starter outside of last season when he hated the Bears and he was franchise tagged and pissed off and clearly not trying. So it seems to me like you're getting someone that's still in the prime of their career, is actually younger than the than Cooper Kupp, it feels like free money to get him. Yeah, Lucky, wide receiver 25.
Even in 2020, 151 targets, 102 receptions, 1250, six touchdowns, 16.4 fantasy points per game. That was 13th in the NFL. That was, he had one bat. He clearly didn't give a shit last year. I mean, he just didn't care. It was, whether it's Matt Nagy or Andy Dalton, he didn't care last year. But we're talking one season removed from a 1,200-yard season for Allen Robinson. And people, listen, at wide receiver 25 price, ADP of 55, sign me up for Allen Robinson.
So I'm going to hit people with another stat. This is your guy, and I'm just like, oh, my God, I'm fully on board. I love this. So I'm looking. Allen Robinson has played 16 games in a season four times. All four of those seasons, over 150 targets. Last year was the first year Cooper Kupp had over 150 targets. It's pretty crazy, actually. So I'm fully on board with you.
I didn't do this. This is not, I'm just a data guy, man. I'm just giving you the data. I'm just a data guy.
All right. We'll go with another receiver. We're kind of on a roll with receivers. I do have a running back coming up. Let's do another receiver. This receiver is Brandon Cooks. ADP 64, wide receiver 30. It's just criminal. With Davis Mills last season and the games that Davis Mills played for the full game. So I'm removing when he came in partway through a game where Tyrod got benched. We're just looking at the games that Mills was playing a full game. I think there were 9 of them. And Brandon Cooks averaged 9 targets per game and about 15 fantasy points a game in those games. So you're telling me that Brandon Cooks with rookie Davis Mills, we were talking earlier about how receivers take time to establish a connection with the quarterback and vice versa. This was rookie Davis Mills. He was a third round pick. He was not supposed to be good. So we have all this going on and still Brandon Cooks is a borderline wide receiver 1 per game with Davis Mills. It's a pretty weak depth chart. Nico Collins is not anyone's idea of a target hog. Brevin Jordan, he's a little fun. He's probably several years away from ever being super fantasy relevant. And then what, John Mechie, who they took in the second round, who's a small possession receiver coming off of a torn ACL. Feels to me like they're just going to force feed Brandon Cooks. When I did my first run of projections 2 weeks ago after the NFL draft, I had Cooks coming in at the wide receiver 9 per game in projections. And I'm not going to rank him wide receiver 9 because I don't have to, but that just shows like if you're just looking at how he has a top 10 target share from last year, and we think that Davis Mills is not half bad at football and they're going to have to pass a lot because the defense is still pretty bad. Wow. You're giving me someone that's projecting as a low-end wide receiver 1 at wide receiver 30. I have Brandon Cooks in like half of my early drafts right now.
I want to disagree and have dissension just for the entertainment factor of the show. But you're talking about somebody that I don't just talk about. I've traded for him in dynasty leagues. I want him, man. And I scrolled back up into our show sheet and I was like, Houston has to have a bottom 10 offense. Remember that entire exercise we did earlier in the show where we talked about bad offenses? I'm not sitting here saying Houston's a great offense, but they weren't inside that bottom 10. And if we're projecting Davis Mills to take a step forward, who else is going to get the damn ball? Who else are they going to throw to? It's Brandon Cooks, man. Brandon Cooks chose to come back, play with Davis Mills. They paid him money. He's going to get the ball. And he's going off the board as what, wide receiver 30? Is that what you said?
Yeah, he is the wide receiver. There's 29 people that others are drafting over him at his position.
Yeah, I don't have anything else to say. Yes, I am on board with Brandon Cooks in best ball, in lineup leagues, dynasty, best ball, single quarterback, standard scoring. I want Brandon Cooks.
All right, hit me with another one. I know that later on we do have a player we disagree on for sure. So we'll get to that, but we'll see. We'll see if the love fest continues or when it runs out. Hit me with another guy that you like.
Here's one that it's gross, right? Like, but I don't want to talk about the players that we all know. I'm talking about opportunity here. And despite what you may think about their rookie investment, second round investment, the wide receiver 1 on the Green Bay Packers, tethered to Aaron frickin' Rodgers, is Alan Lazard. It's Alan Lazard. And we're talking best ball. We're talking redraft. We're talking the 2022 season, not for the career, not for the long run. But we talked about how difficult it is for rookie wide receivers to hit the ground running to start off. Well, the rookie wide, you know, we're talking P5 guys, guys that played at USC and Alabama and all these other big. Christian Watson was in an FCS school, so the learning curve is even steeper for a player like that. And while his yards per catch were extremely high because he's just bigger and faster than everybody that North Dakota State played, it wasn't like he was just dominant all 4 years of college. So any expectation that you have that Christian Watson is going to come in and is immediately going to be this team's wide receiver one, you are out of your damn mind. It's not going to happen. And Alan Lazard with an ADP of 104, wide receiver 50. Yeah, I'll take a shot on a guy who has played with Rodgers, who has some rapport already with Aaron Rodgers. And at times there were points towards the end of last season where you're like, shit, Alan Lazard, man, this dude's pretty nice. So going into the season with a depth chart that consists of Amari Rodgers, no thanks, Sammy Watkins, are we really going to fall for that trap again? And an FCS wide receiver, Christian Watson. Give me all the Alan Lazard at wide receiver 50 price.
Yeah, I like Lazard as well. It's kind of strange to me that Watson goes ahead of him in some ways. Watson has just such a raw profile. So I know you watched him at the Senior Bowl. I know he was good at the Senior Bowl because would you say that this feels a lot like the Denzel Mims Senior Bowl? Because I know that Denzel Mims rocked the Senior Bowl and then didn't do a whole lot. And it was similar where it's like, you know, we would have liked some earlier production in his college career, but it's okay because when he was bigger and faster and stronger than everyone, then he produced. So what did he look like at the Senior Bowl? Did you see a polished route runner, or were you more just like, wow, this is an absolutely ridiculous freak athlete?
I mean, he looked good. I mean, he looked good at the Senior Bowl, but again, if we go through the list of cornerbacks who were drafted in the first round of the NFL, he wasn't facing off against Derek Stingley. He wasn't going up against, you know, fucking Kyler Gordon and these guys that were drafted. I mean, he was going against a bunch of guys who needed to be at the Senior Bowl because they needed to be at the Senior Bowl because they weren't good enough to declare as redshirt sophomores or juniors, and they had to go there. Like, I don't want to take anything away from Christian Watson. And if you're listening to this, I'm not talking about what he can develop into a year or two down the line. I think he's got every opportunity with that type of size and athleticism. Hopefully he can develop into a really sound wide receiver down the line. But that's the approach that I'm taking with Christian Watson. It is a two-year project, not a plug and play this year. I don't care how nasty it sounds. Right now, today, on May the 17th, or when you listen to this on May 18th, I would rather have Alan. I have more confidence in Alan Lazard. We're just rolling with Allens, Alan Robinson, Alan Lazard. I can name another Alan. I want him. Buck Allen. Doesn't matter. I want all the Allens. I have more confidence in Alan Lazard. Tethered. And that's a cheap stack that you can 100% get. Like we talked about stacking. You draft wherever you draft Aaron Rodgers, you can definitely get Alan Lazard late. Like that is how you do it, right, Larky?
Yeah, 100%. So I came up with one more Allen. There's probably others. Brandon Allen, very very incapable backup quarterback for. I don't know who is he still with the Bengals? Is he? I don't really keep up with the backup quarterbacks and their contract status and who they're playing for. But that was the only other Allen I could think of. Oh, there's Josh Allen. He's very good in fantasy, too.
Yeah, Keenan Allen.
Keenan Allen.
Allen. I want the Allens, man. Give me the Allens.
That is the cheat code name. You just need Allen in it. Javorius Allen.
Yeah, that's Buck Allen. I said Buck. That's his nickname.
Oh,
Buck
is that Allen. Oh, I'm just exposing myself.
You called him Javorius? Like, you actually, during the season, you would call him his full governmental name?
So I never watched him play very often. So it was more just like when I'd see him like in fantasy football, he would always be written as Javorius Allen. So in my head, it was just like, that's Javorius.
Yeah, it's Buck, man. It's Buck Ackley, man. No one's fucking calling him Javorius. Jesus, Larky.
All right. Well, after that embarrassment, I'm going to try and rebound with a running back that I like that I think is just going far too late. I believe this is purely because people got burned by a similarly drafted running back last year. So the running back that I'm targeting this year is Tyrion Davis Price. You've probably heard, if you're listening to this show, Ray and I talk about how he was not the best prospect. This was probably a reach for the 49ers to take him round 3. But his ADP right now is 177, the running back 53. Remember last year, Trey Sermon was a round 7 pick. Yet Tyrion Davis Price, who is much faster than Trey Sermon and fits the scheme the 49ers run much better than Trey Sermon, why is he going 8, 9, 10 rounds later than Trey Sermon did last year? This feels like the world's biggest overcorrection to people getting burned by one player. It's just like, oh, Trey Sermon burned me? So if it's a round 3 San Francisco Niners running back, no. That makes me think of Trey Sermon. So I don't think he's a great running back, but he's got decent speed. He ran a 4.48 at the combine at 211 pounds. So he's got the good speed score. And Elijah Mitchell has never been a picture of health, even dating back to college. He has a lot of major injuries in his history, and he's undersized. Feels to me like he's probably going to get injured at some point this year, like last year. And definitely not going to be Trey Sermon. It would be Tyrion Davis Price, the running back that they don't hate. I love Evan Silva describes Trey Sermon as a fullback in a running back's body based on how slow he is on tape. So, I mean, Tyrion Davis Price feels like the clear RB2 in a good running offense, and you can take him at the end of drafts. He's basically free. Or have you taken him? I mean, even in Dynasty, yes. Like, I thought I was going to be below consensus because I was like, oh, he's a late round 2 pick. And I thought people would take him like late round 1, early round 2, like Sermon. Dude goes in like round 3, round 4 of rookie drafts. Nobody wants this guy. It's like Trey Sermon left this aftertaste that has clearly been a full year lag. I don't get it.
I don't either. And I literally talked about this. I'll be on a podcast later this week where I've gone through, I think, 5 or 6 rookie drafts so far in Dynasty, and he's my number one most rostered rookie is Tyrion Davis Price. I think a lot of people do feel the nasty stink and taste of Trey Sermon, and they're scared. But we talked about health as a skill set. Elijah Mitchell banged the hell up. Trey Sermon stinks. Jamichael Hasty is a special teams guy, and Jeff Wilson is also not good. He's a trash can with arms. So yes, please give me all the TDP. I think for me, it's more of a dynasty play. You know, you're talking about a third round pick, and the athleticism was never a concern for him. Here's what happened with Tyrion Davis Price. You go back to that historic 2019 LSU season with Ja'Marr Chase, Justin Jefferson, Joe Burrow. Clyde Edwards-Helaire was an absolute monster that year. Yet TDP still took 64 carries away from Clyde Edwards-Helaire. He played as a true freshman at LSU. The fact that he was on the field as a highly touted prospect is encouraging. The second season that people point to say, yuck, only 400 yards. How can you justify a sophomore running back with 400 yards? Well, let's not forget this thing called COVID hit. And when it hit, there was truly like concern that there would be no college football. They did not have spring practice. They didn't have fall camp. Like, they all of a sudden just like, oh, we're going to play. Like, we're going to play college football next week. Right. And it was an abbreviated season. They lost their offensive coordinator in Joe Brady. Ed Ogeron was doing God knows what. Like, the team was just terrible. But then this past season, when he actually walked into the season as the starting running back, had spring ball, had a fall camp, he hit 1,000 yards rushing in the SEC. He tested like an above average athlete, and he got the draft capital. I'm in on Tyrion Davis Price in Dynasty. I don't know about this year, Larky. I don't know. This would be the year Elijah Mitchell decides to just stay healthy all year, right? It's just they drafted a third round running back, and now they're like, oh shit, I got to stay healthy. But Dynasty, he's 100% somebody that I want and I'm targeting in every rookie draft because it's just going so damn late.
Yeah, so I'm in five FFPC Dynasty leagues. I have him on all five teams because he was player 80 in the preset queue. So I think people just didn't scroll. At one time, I got him at the 410 in a rookie draft. And I think it's because people just, both the Trey Sermon stink and they just like forget this guy exists or something. I don't get it. So yeah, I'm totally with you. Seems like a good enough fit. And that LSU history was helpful. Since, I mean, I'm just a box score scout and I'm like, oh, I didn't do much till junior year, but that's right. Like Allaire was there, COVID hit. So fully on board. Give us one more target that you like.
Yeah. One more target. I've been beating the drum for this player. Another dirty late clearance bargain bin wide receiver. You can get him as wide receiver 85 coming off the board with an ADP of almost 200. He's projected and is going to start for the New England Patriots. And I'm not talking about Jacoby Myers. I'm talking about Kendrick Bourne. He's the deep threat. He's the speed guy. They brought in Devontae Parker. I'm not concerned about that. We talked about Davis Mills taking a step forward in year two. I believe Mac Jones also takes that step forward in year two. And Kendrick Bourne, 70 targets last year, 55 receptions, 800 yards. He finished as almost a top 36 wide receiver in fantasy points per game. He was one spot outside at wide receiver 37 with 10.6 fantasy points per game. And he didn't really do anything to start the season. And it was a young rookie quarterback. I mean, listen, coming off of the board this late, why the hell not? You know, New England's going to be in a position where they're going to have to score. This is not the AFC East of the past where you can just go out there and play good, hard defense. And no, Mac Jones is going to have to air that bitch out to keep up with Josh Allen and the Miami Dolphins and whatever the hell you're going to get out of Zach Wilson and the Jets. So give me a starting wide receiver on a team with what I believe is a good NFL quarterback. While he may not be the best fantasy quarterback, he's an accurate passer. Mac Jones is an accurate thrower of the football, and Kendrick Bourne is really good after the catch down the field. He's got the speed. Sign me up for a player at ADP 200. I'm with it.
All right. You know what? I'm going to push back here with the love fest. I'm cutting it off.
Oh gosh. Uh-oh.
So would it worry you if we look and we find out that last year this did happen, Nelson Agholor had more targets per game than Kendrick Bourne? And I get it. Kendrick Bourne was very efficient. Are we taking too much of a leap to assume that the targets increase just because he was efficient? Since that is something that concerns me. Devontae Parker, while he looked kind of washed at times, he commanded quite a few targets per game. He had a much higher target share last year than Kendrick Bourne. So if I'm just purely a target share scout, I would say Myers and Parker are wide receiver 1 and 2, and then we'll have Bourne as the wide receiver 3. So when you watched it, do you think that efficiency leads to more targets next year, or it's that Parker constantly gets injured? Does that concern you that Agholor had more targets per game? I mean, I'm not saying that Aguilar is going to be taking snaps over him, but it just worries me about Bourne's ceiling if Aguilar did that.
If you look at how I think Aguilar got that average more than Kendrick Bourne, it was the start of the season, right? And they paid Aguilar to come in and be the guy. But there's only so many times you can continue to throw the ball to a wide receiver who's allergic to catching the football. And I think the New England Patriots realized that towards the end of the season. He had multiple drops towards their playoff run that were just critical, like game-shifting, momentum-type plays. This is what I'll say. I'm more concerned about, I guess, just the offense than I am Nelson Agholor and Devontae Parker. Like, I'm more concerned if I'm going to have any level of concern, it's going to be around the offense and not those players. I'm not concerned about those guys, taking targets away from Kendrick Bourne. I think targets to a certain degree are earned, man. This feels a lot like Dalton Schultz to me a couple of years ago. And I remember a lot of people saying, the only reason Dalton Schultz got those targets is because Blake Jarwin was hurt. And now that Blake Jarwin's healthy, he's going to be the guy. And I'm like, I don't think so. Like, you don't do that. Like, if you produce in the window in which you have the opportunity to show that you're effective. My thinking is going into that next season that that coach is not going to change things around. So I think Kendrick Bourne, his efficiency, how they utilize him towards the end of the season, that will carry over into the offseason, give him first crack at being one of those guys. Now, will he capitalize on it? We'll see. But I do think he's going to have every opportunity to develop and be the guy. And I think Tyquan Thornton signing probably was more of an indictment on Nelson Agholor, or drafting on Nelson Agholor, than it is Kendrick Bourne. Mac Jones showed confidence in him. Seems like he's a guy that the players and the coaches love. So not as concerned about Agholor or Parker, more concerned about maybe this offense just stinks.
I like that. One thing that I'll note from some research I did a couple months ago, I think the Patriots are a sneaky team to have a lot of fantasy relevant receivers this year and to be a sneaky top 10 team, because we know that Belichick's very conservative with rookies, rookie quarterback and Mac Jones. They had one of, I think they had like the fourth or fifth lowest pass rate in the red zone last year. And it's not that I expect them to become the world's pass heaviest team in the red zone this year, but I do think that's going to step up quite a bit. And I think that is going to lead to more passing touchdowns. And then for someone like Bourne, for someone like Jacoby Myers, Parker, Hunter Henry, whoever it is, more receiving touchdowns. So I think this is actually a kind of like a sneaky offense to watch, where I don't think it's going to be some incredible offense, but I think they're a sneaky candidate to be pretty fantasy relevant. Now, let's go through a few fades. We have three written down. I know we have one that we're mutually fading, so I'll let you discuss him. But I'm going to talk about this one running back, actually. Same team we've been talking about that I'm fading. It's Damian Harris on the Patriots. Mm. Damian Harris has an ADP of 89, the running back 29 off the board. Last year, Damian Harris had just over 13 carries a game, just over one reception per game. That doesn't sound like he's doing that much. Yet you look up and he tied with James Conner for second in the NFL with 15 rushing touchdowns. It sounds like a riddle. It sounds like it's not possible that you could have 13 carries a game and somehow have 15 rushing touchdowns. If you look at kind of how fantasy points are, should we say manufactured, you look at the average fantasy points for a running back carry, the average fantasy points for a running back target. Targets are much more valuable in fantasy for PPR and half PPR, even standard leagues where you don't get a point for a reception. Even in standard leagues, a running back target is still worth more fantasy points per target than it is points per carry. Crazy. So that underlying fantasy usage with the 13 carries and one reception was worse than Mark Ingram per game last year. I mean, that just blew my mind when I saw that. Since I don't think any of us were like, oh yeah, you really wanted Mark Ingram in fantasy. And like, yes, I understand there were a lot of goal line carries, which I'm not looking at. I'm just looking at carries, but still, are we really trying to bank that they're going to be crazy run heavy in the red zone and Damian Harris is going to happen to randomly convert a lot of those when Ramondre Stevenson looked pretty good as well? They drafted two running backs in the NFL draft and James White is returning and he's healthy again. And he's someone that we've seen sneak goal line carries and that we've seen sneak goal line and red zone targets. It just feels to me like Damian Harris basically has to be this total outlier like he was last season and have 15 rushing touchdowns when he's handling like the 30th most or whatever it is carries per game. Not something that I'm going to bet on for 2022. I am not drafting much Damian Harris.
Oh, man. You know, the first thing I thought of when I saw the fact that he had 15 touchdowns and just having so much of my fantasy credibility tied to Mac Jones being good last year because I was pounding that drum hard, watched a lot of Patriots games, and it just shows how much luck Mac Jones didn't have, because of those 15 touchdowns, I can count at least six of them where Mac Jones threw the ball and the receiver just got tackled at like the 2 yard line. Right. So there should have been like six more passing touchdowns that happened for Mac Jones that Damian Harris fell into. Listen, man, they drafted Pierre Strong. They signed Kevin Harris. They seem to want to give Ramondre Stevenson the ball. The writing is on the wall for one Damian Harris in dynasty. The writing is, it has been tagged in spray paint graffiti on the wall. He will not be there. They're not going to re-sign him. That's not what New England does. They're smart teams and they cycle through running backs. I still think he's going to be the primary ball carrier this year. And what is that worth when he doesn't catch passes? What is that worth where, what if Mac Jones takes that step forward and six of those opportunities are taken away for him to fall into the end zone? Probably not much. So while I think Damian Harris is going to have like a Steven Jackson type career where he goes to a team after this that wants to just grind him out for 3 years, like James Conner, and be really good somewhere else. But it's just not going to happen in New England. This is just not their MO, man. They're going to cycle through multiple backs. He's never going to be the primary ball carrier. He's not going to get work in the receiving game. And I don't think he's going to score 15 touchdowns again. So I'm with you, man. You got to fade him for redraft, you know, and in dynasty, if you have him, probably just got to hold the bag and hope he goes somewhere where he gets an opportunity to be the guy for a couple of years. And then that's it.
Yeah. I don't think he's getting re-signed. All right. Who's another guy that you're fading? I know this is one where we were talking about him before and you were like, I'm fading this guy. So
yeah.
Who are you fading?
It's Deebo Samuel. I mean, no, thank you. Love watching him play. I don't think he wants to be used the way he was last year. I don't know. This is an offense that I think the best way to protect a young quarterback is let him run the ball. And not only can San Francisco run the ball well, the quarterback can run the ball well. I don't know, man. This is a player where coming off of ADP of 17, I don't even know who has the ADP of 18, but give me that guy over Deebo Samuel, whoever it is. Have no clue who it is. Absolutely no fucking
I'm pulling
clue.
It up.
But give me right now, whoever player 18 is, I bet you $5 I would take him over Deebo Samuel. Who's 18? Who's
so,
coming off
so the 18 and I, so the next two, we've got Mark Andrews and then DeAndre Swift. I think
yeah,
I would prefer them.
Yes. This was his first season being healthy since like his senior season of college. I'm not falling for it again this year. I'm love the player, hate the ADP. There it is. Love the player, hate the ADP.
Yeah, something I noticed when I was looking more into his season. So he actually scored more fantasy points in the second half of the season than the first half. Yet in the second half of the season, he had more carries than targets, and both George Kittle and Brandon Ayuk had more targets than Deebo in the second half. And if you're telling me that there's even some remote chance that he's third on the team in targets, which we saw for a full half season last year, I know he's not a rookie, but like pretty much a rookie quarterback in Lance. He played one season in college as the starter and then rode the bench last year. And he's mobile. Just not an offense that I'm trying to heavily invest in from the pass catching perspective. So I'm with you there. It seems like he had maybe the most efficient wide receiver season in NFL history. And I just don't think that's going to happen again. So,
yep.
Yeah. Sorry, Deebo. Fun to watch. Not going to draft you.
Yep. Who's your last guy? Who's your last fade?
This can be controversial. Because
it is. I disagree wholeheartedly. Just letting you know. With every fiber in my body, disagree with you here. So please go ahead.
So I'm going to preface this with this. He's been a clear cut first round pick the last few years in fantasy. He's still in his wide receiver prime, but he has changed teams. I'm talking about Tyreek Hill. His ADP is 20, goes off as wide receiver 8. And yes, this is a decent bit later than he used to go off the board when he was with Patrick Mahomes. However, he now plays with Tua Tagovailoa. We have not seen Tua be a very good NFL quarterback. I'm not saying it couldn't happen. It could very well happen. He could take the leap forward. His weapons are much better this year than prior seasons. However, I don't think this is going to be some exceptional offense. Their new head coach is from the 49ers. They've been pretty run heavy historically. So I don't know if I should just necessarily just pencil in some crazy high pass rate. And Jaylen Waddle just set the rookie receptions record. He had over 100 receptions last year with Tua. So they have rapport. Waddle has the draft capital. Tyreek is coming in here. I know they gave up some the first and second round pick to get him, but he has technically never played before with Tua. Why am I supposed to draft him ahead of the guy that just had like a 26% target share with Tua and was a top 10 pick in the NFL draft? I think they should be drafted pretty much side by side. I'd much rather take my shots on Jalen Waddle when he's cheaper and already has that rapport. So to me, Tyreek Hill just feels like the situation got so, so much worse that I don't want to draft him as the 20th player off the board.
Let me ask you a question here, Larky. Let me ask you a question. You've got a nice cozy job over here at FTN, right? You're the chief analytical officer. What's your official title? Give me your official title. Your official title?
You just said it.
Okay. Chief analytical officer for FTN. Yeah, we're not going to dive into your personal financials here, but they're paying you a nice piece of change. They tell you, Josh, we love you. I know Ray's leaving the pod, but we love you, Josh. You are our chief analytical officer. In 2 days from now, they go hire somebody and they make him also a chief analytical officer, right? And they also pay him more than whatever FTN is paying you. But they tell you, don't worry, Josh, you're still our guy. You are still the boss. You are still the man. But we just hired this other guy, and he's also a chief analytical officer who's been this for multiple years, right? But and don't worry, Josh, you're still the chief, but we're going to pay this guy a little bit more than we're paying you, quite a bit more than we're paying you. But don't worry, Larky, you're still our guy. This is exactly what happened in Miami. I don't care how good Jalen Waddle was. They changed coaches. And this coach had a decision. He could have said, you know what? We are going to build around Jalen Waddle. He's our guy. This is our one. We'll draft a wide receiver in round 3. No. This new coach said, we're going to take our first round pick. We're going to trade for another wide receiver who's been a perennial all-pro player in this league, one of the best wide receivers in this league. And we're going to make him the highest paid player at his position in NFL history.
So I will give it to you. I didn't see this coming. This was a very clever metaphor. You had me stumped for a second. I didn't know where it was going. Then all of a sudden I was like, oh shit, I am walking into this. I know. So
here's my thing. I agree that when you step down from Patrick Mahomes to Tua Tagovailoa, that is a downgrade. There's no doubt. There's no question that is a downgrade. But I still think that in an offense where they've got these dynamic weapons and they've got all these receivers and they brought in some new running backs, Tyreek Hill is going to get his touches. And as we see that it doesn't take much, like he doesn't need to be open 50 yards downfield to score. I mean, he's one of the rare players in this game that can catch a 5-yard play pass and take it 80 to the house. It doesn't take much because he is an elite athlete. He has elite speed. And Tua can make that connection with Tyreek Hill. He's got all offseason. This wasn't a trade that happened in training camp. It didn't happen to start the season. He's got all summer to work with him. And we see those clips. We see those ducks. That's you posting those videos to drive Tyreek Hill's price down. I know it's you, you sneaky son of a bitch. You're the one posting those Tua waffling balls to push Tyreek Hill ADP down. But I'm telling you right now, I'm looking at Deebo Samuel with an ADP of 17 coming off the board as wide receiver 7 and Tyreek Hill with an ADP of 20 as one wide receiver spot later. I would 1,000 times out of 1,000 times draft Tyreek Hill over Deebo Samuel. I don't care if it's Tua. I don't care who the quarterback is in Miami. Give me Tyreek Hill in 2022. Over Deebo Samuel, and I'm here to tell you, Larky, that you and everybody else out there worried about this Tua offense, worried about his target volume, worried about Jalen Waddle, all I'll say is the Miami Dolphins went out and hired a new chief analytical officer, catch passes from Tua, and made him the highest paid analytical officer in the history of chief analytical officers.
well played. I think we can go out on that one. If you kicked it back to me, I was going to go out on just like rapid fire. How many like times out of 10 that in 2022 does Waddle out target Tyreek?
That would have been a good one.
Which, well, I thought was like a decent one, but yours was better. That was
what
fun.
Do I think? Out of 10?
Yeah, actually, yeah, like out of 10. Like I say 5. I think it's, I honestly think it's down the middle.
Here's the thing, man. I was honestly going to say 5 or 6. I honestly was going to say 5 or 6, but it just doesn't take much for Tyreek. You know, it does. I mean, literally, like, just get it to him. Like, mm-hmm. I think we're going to see a lot of like those bubbles passes, those jet where the wide receiver goes in motion. They just flip mm-hmm. it to him and let him run. I think we're going to see all kinds of wild shit from Mike McDaniel in that offense. And I just think he's going to get his regard. Like I truly believe they're just going to force feed it to him. Like,
Waddle, I think it's like Debo in a way, not that he's going to have like the Debo Samuel role, but the idea that they're going to make sure that in addition to him playing receiver, that they're going to dial up 2-3 plays a game where it's like, this is play, get Tyreek Hill the ball in space.
Get Tyreek Hill the ball in space, right? Motion him in the backfield, throw it flare, and just let him run fast and do his thing. And if you go back to Kansas, they did a lot of that in Kansas City. He ran a lot of smoke screens and bubbles, and they jet motion him out of the backfield. Like, that's what that's the mismatch that you get with him. And I think what we're going to see this year, because Jaylen Waddle coming out of Alabama was billed as a deep threat, and he was used as a possession receiver.
Yeah, it was weird.
Year. Yeah. And he admitted, he was on a podcast with Jamar Chase, and he said, you know, this year I want to open it up and show people that I can play down the field. I think we're going to see role reversal in that offense. I think we're going to see Tyreek Hill utilized as more of that possession receiver. And then Waddle's going to get his, no doubt about it. I don't know what his ADP is, but I can almost guarantee you it's probably too high. It's probably, you talk about the law of the conservation of who else did they have to throw the ball to in Miami? Like, there was nobody else there besides Gesicki. Like, they didn't have a running game, you know, like there was nothing besides Jaylen Waddle. So it's not shocking to me that he had 100 set the rookie. He had nobody else. Didn't Jarvis Landry just do this shit in Miami some years ago? Like, I just, they had nobody else. Preston Williams got awful. Albert Wilson stunk. It was like Jakeem Grant. He's 5'5". He's about as tall as my 5-year-old son. That's who he was out there competing with. I think people are going to look back and be like, damn, man, Tyreek was a value this year. He was an absolute value. I could be wrong, but that's just my theory.
I think the player I feel even more strongly about, I didn't talk about him because it's not as fun as Tyreek, but I think Mike Gesicki's way overdrafted because he's never been efficient. He can't block, so he's not even going to be on the field all the time. And now we have two really good receivers. You know that they're going to work Waddle and Tyreek into the slot at times, which is pretty much the only place that Gesicki plays. They just gave Cedric Wilson $7 million a year. I don't know. I mean, he's probably out of there after this year. They franchise tagged him, but he is someone that for redraft, I mean, Dynasty, I'm not sure, since you just never know. Like, if he goes to the Chargers next year, then I'll be like, right. Oh, like Mike Gesicki in Dynasty, that's kind of cool.
Right.
But for this year, at least, I think he's just a terrifying player to draft, where he might be getting like 70% of the snaps. And when he's out on the field, he's the fourth option. And that it's like Waddle, Tyreek, running back, and then Gesicki. Maybe even Cedric Wilson, for all we know. And then Gesicki. Like, he's going to be like the fourth or fifth option on offense. And I want no part of him.
Yep. Same. I love it. Love it.
Cool. All right, I'm going to go walk the dog.
All right, man. I ended the recording. Good show.